Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. And happy to be with you. There we are. Seems like a long time. Today, my friends, today a very interesting opportunity for us because I was invited to do something that I not done before. And I was invited by a young couple to perform a wedding ceremony. Yes, they asked me if I would, for them, perform a wedding ceremony that was kind of not a formality to something they already did. They had already gotten married, and they did it legally, but then they wanted to have a party, and then they wanted to have a party, and these people are very dear to me, and they said, would you, Armand, lead the thing? Would you be the guy who says the words? And I said, sure. Now, this becomes an interesting task because here I, Armand DeMille, want to find them some nice words for them to say, and I go hunting around and I find wonderful things. I find things by Khalil Gibran, things that are beautiful, like let me read you one. Love one another, but make not a bond of love. Let your love be like a moving sea between the shores of each other's soul. Isn't that gorgeous? Isn't that beautiful? That's so pretty. Fill each other's cup. But drink also from the cup of life, and so on and so forth. And that's Khalil Gibran. Certainly pretty, certainly a nice introduction. So I prepared a whole bunch of things that I thought were very nice sayings, and I prepared them and I put them together. And then they came back to me and they said, oh, that's great. And at the last minute they say to me, but you know, the reason we asked you to do this is because we wanted to hear what you had to say. And I realized what I would say about love is not so flowery, you know, not so pretty, not just the beautiful Khalil Gibranish, although Khalil Gibran did come to some very clean stuff. So I said, well, what's the most important gift I can give to this group? And these happen to be fairly 35-ish-year-old people. And they're tribe, as they call it, which is about 100 people about the same age, ranging somewhere from 25 to 45. That's the group. What am I going to say? What am I going to tell them about? You ever go to a wedding ceremony? You go to a wedding ceremony, you get some guy up there, and he starts talking, and you virtually ignore him because you really want to have the party. So what am I going to say to them, and what am I going to say to them that has meaning? So I went digging through and I said, what do I have to say that has meaning to a group of people that I think would make a difference as opposed to reading these other things? So by surprise, by the way, and just to let you know, you're getting a little preview of this because it's happening tonight. I said, I think I will tell the truth. I'll say what I think. And here is what I decided. And I think you'll enjoy this. I think you'll enjoy it because I think this is something that's true. It's real. I believe it. I've never heard anybody ever say it in front of a wedding couple about to get married. But here it is. There are times, my friends, when nothing is going to resolve a dispute between lovers. At those times, one thing is clearly evident, that even though both people may seem to want to resolve the dispute, some force keeps interfering with resolution. The arguments escalate. Then they peak and they seem to be fading when all of a sudden they pick up again with a tremendous force, as if there was an invisible person in the room making sure peace is not reached. Yes, there are times in relationships when peace is impossible, when destructiveness must reign. With enough examination, we could try to determine who's responsible for this. We might speculate it's your fault. No, it's your fault. Oh, no, it's PMS. No, it's the sunspots. Oh, it's job pressure. It's fatigue. You could try to do it, but does it really matter? Because when you look at it, let's consider another alternative. What if it's nobody who creates the battle? What about neither are purely responsible for its perpetuation? If this is true, then the battle itself, the pain of the disagreement, the perpetuation of this argument must have some meaning. What could that be? Well, my friends, love, I believe, is a sacred state of being. It's somewhat transient inasmuch as usually one or the other is more in love at any given time. Did you ever notice that? But when they meet, when love is shared, it's magic. It's a time of intense vulnerability, shared. It's a window into the existential beauty of wholeness with the universe. It's harmony. It is union with an absolute. It opens the door between humans and God, whatever that is. There are no boundaries, nothing solid to hold on to. It is the unknown, yet on some level it is absolutely familiar. Love is frightening, and it is powerful. Being in love is being vulnerable and invulnerable at the same time. Reciprocated love, then, when both people feel it, creates a vortex, like a whirlpool. And it's so powerful that it seems to attract, it's so powerfully positive that I believe it attracts pain. It attracts the negativity of pain. You have so much positivity going on that there's an imbalance. And boom, here comes pain. Love and pain are ancient partners. It seems that regardless of all ideals, you can't have one without the other. If you accept this as a process, there's no limit as to how far you can go with each other. That's what I'm going to say. What do you think? Too many words? No, huh? A couple of other things I wanted to see, but then, you know, after doing this, went back to Khalil Gibran, and in the last paragraph of another one, where it says, speak to us of love, he talks about the pain of love. And he says, all these things shall love do unto you, that you may know the secrets of your heart. That is, the knowledge become a fragments of love's heart. But if in your fear you would seek only love's peace and love's pleasure, then it's better for you that you cover your nakedness and pass out of love's thrashing floor into the seasonless world where you shall laugh, but not all of your laughter. And weep, but not all of your tears. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. Isn't that a pretty thing? Yeah. What can I tell you? So this is the gift we give to some young folks starting off. And I thought today we'd talk about love and pain and how love and pain work. Yes, you could avoid it. You certainly could. You could be one of these people who say, no, I want no pain, I just want love. And that's what Khalil Gibran meant with, yes, you can go into that world and laugh, but not all of your laughter, and weep, but not all of your tears. So I think there's a much bigger ante, a much bigger game that you could play at and be in. And that's the game where you accept both the love and the pain together. What are the pains of love? What kind of pains are there? I mean, just think about it. Think about how they go together. Think about how there must be, you know, it reminds me of the story of how a tornado is formed. Do you know tornadoes? Cyclones are on the water, tornadoes are on the land, right? No, cyclones are on the land and tornadoes are on the water. One of them is on the land. I think it's tornadoes on the land. And what happens is the way that it's formed is that there is an imbalance in the electrical charge. There's this heat which creates a negative kind of impulse, and then there's this positive impulse above it. And what the cyclone tries to do, or the tornado tries to do, is it tries to rebalance the electrical charge by creating this swirling energy, which is so powerful that it sweeps up and destroys all over the place. But it is an attempt for nature to find balance. A tornado is an attempt for nature to right itself, because it's been unrighted. Interesting. Well, love, I believe, is like that, you see. And I think a love relationship is like that. It has pain in it. It has pain that is part of it. You see, there's the negative and the positive that go together. So when you think about it, let's think about just, for example, childbirth, the pain of childbirth. Why would there be in the design so much pain in childbirth? Why? We can make up theories. You need the endorphins. You have to have this. You got to get this, you know, so on and so forth. But, you know, you could have made it just as easy to not have pain. Babies could have just plunked right out. No, but in the design, there goes pain with that remarkable pleasure of childbirth. At the same time, they go together. And people often say that part of what happens through the pain pleasure of childbirth is the mother makes a bond with the child through the pain and pleasure that happens with childbirth, not just with the pleasure. Talk about the pain of discoveries in relationships. You find out things that have been hidden from you. Talk about that. You know, you find out that your mate has hidden certain things from you that you don't know about. And the pain of that, you go, oh, my God, and it feels like it's going to kill you. You feel like you've just been wiped out, and then you work it through, and you somehow get through it, and you get a more solid relationship. Even if it's more distant, it's more solid. Even if it's not as trusting, it's more solid because it's based on reality. See? The pain of disillusionment. You know, where you thought everything was going to be wonderful and everything was going to be fine and they were going to take care of you and they were going to be perfect, and you find out they're not so perfect and you get disillusioned. You go from a blissful relationship to reality. Bliss to reality. Bliss is very nice. Reality is more intense. That's where the stuff is, you know. The pain of sexlessness. The pain of what happens when sex is not carrying you along on the relationship anymore as it used to. You know, where sex was this regular thing that used to take place and it was so intense and it was so fabulous that it carried you through all the rough times. The pain of losing a partner. Enormous, huh? If, you know, you've got to deal with this. Think about being so vulnerable that you're going to be attached to somebody and you get so connected, and eventually they're going to die. And they may not only be eventual, they may die early. They may die of cancer or get hit by a truck or something like that. And you have to deal with that. How do you deal with that? Or the pain of losing a child, forget it. I wouldn't even try to imagine. But these are the things that are built into love. They are part of it. It's not like, oh, this wonderful, blissful, other things I could read you about. There's a pain of financial insecurity. You know, we get to a point where you're in a relationship and just money is just what it's all about. You're driving about money. Now, Freud said, if you're arguing about money, you're arguing about sex. That's what he said. But there are troubles. Let me tell you, there are troubles of not being able to feed your kids. You lose your job and you can't get a job and you can't make it work. There are troubles, money problems, and it is painful. And you could be a guy who doesn't know how to buy Christmas presents because you don't have enough money in the bank for your kids. And you want to buy them a present and you don't have a nickel to spend on them. And how that feels. There's a pain of other loyalties, too. You know the in-law problem? A person comes to you, they come to you with a family, they have a certain loyalty to their family, and then you feel a certain relationship with them, and you want them to kind of favor you over their family, and you find that they have loyalties with their family that they just will not give up. That's a pain as well. You see your loyalties are kind of shared. Then there's the pain of addictions. It could be your addiction or their addiction. Addictions could include anything. It could include alcohol, grass, marijuana, sex, cigarettes, food, And then you watch in a relationship between two people, now there's a third entity, this addiction. Pain of illness. You have a partner who gets sick. And you promise to stand by them through the illness, but it's a prolonged illness, and you spend many days and many nights sitting by the bedside, watching this person go through this pain, and there's nothing you can do about it. And then there's the pain of pure fatigue. You know, my friends, sometimes trying to keep your head above water, you could do it on your own because you could quit. But when you're in a relationship and you have a family, it becomes far more difficult to quit. So you work and you get fatigued. You get tired. More tired and more tired and more tired. And you go around like you're carrying a bag. But this is part of your love. It's part of that thing that you carry with you. Because part of that enables you to be in this relationship where you are connected, but not just connected to a single person. You see, the other thing that I thought was, here it is. The other quote from some other place. Love is the highest human revelation of how we are all connected. If you have a single love, in effect, it connects to everybody. It stretches out everywhere. So this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. What do you think, my friends? 212-209-2900 is our number here. We're going to be taking your calls today, 212-209-2900. Somebody asked me to include something about compassion. And I said, compassion? Oh, love is about compassion. But you know what I have to say about compassion? Compassion is simply the ability to walk in your partner's shoes when you don't want to. Right? Then you have an argument. The real beauty of compassion, if you're having a fight with your partner, and then you just want to blame them like crazy. True compassion is the ability to step out of that and step into their shoes and see it from where they are. Especially when you don't want to. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille with you, with The Positive Mind. Isn't that fun? The only other thing I'm going to let you in on is they're going to have a ring ceremony, this couple that I'm going to be working with. And the last words of, instead of, you know, because they're a pretty hip couple, instead of "you can now kiss the bride," I'm going to say "you can now seal the deal." 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi there, you're on the air. It takes us a little while to engineer, usually the first at the beginning of a week.
Now let me shut down my radio.
I will let you shut down your radio.
Well, thank you so much. Armin.
Yes.
I wanted to talk about love, and my request is, I was doing some work on the telephone with somebody, and we came up, this person never had been touched, and she also had a daughter that never was touched, and she married a man that wasn't touched. And this woman was touched by somebody when she was shopping. Long story short, she actually left her marriage and everything because this person began to feel her in a very special way. But could you speak about the whole art of touching, which is, there are people that are brought up, the parents were never touched, and the children were never touched, and it could make such a difference in their life, in themselves, and their relationship.
Beautiful. It's a great question.
And you know, there is a beautiful person. I think you had someone or someone else's program. She wrote a whole thing about touching.
Uh-huh.
I feel I was giving her this kind of counseling in terms of because her daughter is divorced, I said to her, she takes care of her grandchildren. I said to her, Rivka, these children are not being touched. The husband that she left also didn't touch the wife and the children. You have an opportunity to touch and hug the children when you take care of your grandchildren. They come when they hug them when they come in from school, hug them.
Okay, well, let me answer your question, okay?
And I said to her, but this is important, that when you're doing it, you're giving the touching to the little Rivka in you that you never got. Now shut up now.
Thank you very much, and thank you for calling in with your question, but I'm not in full agreement with you about how to cure it, because here's what I think. I think when there's touchlessness in a family, when people don't touch, it's a very amazing thing. I mean, think about the babies who are abandoned and what happens in the homes when they have, in the hospitals for foundlings.
Yes, I know.
Okay, well, let me just say this. They have a hospital for foundlings. In the hospital for foundlings, some of the babies have what's called crib death. And they attributed the crib death to the fact that the children were never picked up and touched. So now let's look at the nature of touch. The nature of touch may be the real meaning of it, not so much affection, but connection to the outside world. Now, I believe that when a person doesn't have that connection, their mind starts to play on itself. When you don't have touch, your mind becomes very fragile. And I believe that you do not, one of the dangers, and I know therapists know of this, if a person comes to you who's untouchable, sometimes that's called schizoid personality. And when you meet a schizoid personality or somebody with a schizoid personality, the last thing you should ever do is cross the boundary. Oh. Because to do it could send them into schizophrenia. Oh. This is what the skilled practitioner understands. So what you need to do is to understand the dynamic of the absence of touch, and then when you touch by invitation. That means make it very little and see how the person responds. If the person pulls away, don't go grab them and give them a hug. You never know what you're going to unearth, you know?
Yeah.
So I agree with you that it's essential, but I say be careful with that all, you know, going over and just overpowering somebody's need to not be touched.
Oh, yes, but I told her, because touching is a boundary, and the key point is that when you meet somebody and you start developing a relationship, wait until they touch you, maybe just touch you, tap you, and then that could be a signal for you to be able to do that.
Thank you very much for calling in. I want to take another call. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Sure. So this thing, and, you know, it was very popular in the 70s and 80s. Everybody was, oh, come here. All you need is a hug. And it would send panic to a whole bunch of people. I mean, if you're used to not being touched, it kills you when it comes for so many reasons. It also reminds you of how little you've been touched. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Armand.
Yes.
Yeah, I think you touched on a great thing about the love and pain deal, and I just wanted to share my own observations on that.
Sure.
Just that I think that the reason for negativity and pain is that it actually allows us to experience positivity. That, and if you think about how someone you love, if they're not there, that hurts. I mean, it shows us how much we value that person. But I think that in being aware of that, there's so much more positivity than there is negativity, because it's almost like we deify that which is rare. You know, a person's skills, which are rare, you know, get more money. A diamond is rarer than water, so we pay more for a diamond. And I think that there's so many beautiful things that happen just in one day, in one minute, in one moment. You know, sight, sound, all of our senses, you know, thought processes connecting to one another. And it's like, you know, a negative thing can happen, boom, and, you know, that can rock our world, yet we're surrounded by all these positive experiences. But without those negative things that occur, we aren't aware of the positive things. You know, it's that cliche of, you know, you don't know what you've got until it's gone, Bob.
Well, I thank you very. What's your name?
Hugh,
I thank you very much, because it's. I think you've got a good point there. Now, there's a question that we have about does pain create the pleasure, or does pleasure create the pain, or is it just that the two of them are all part and parcel of the same thing, like the tornado, you know?
That if you get a positive
vortex, In fact, I could tell you, as a couples counselor, 90% of the people who have ever come to consult with me about a trauma that they've had in their lives, like where they suddenly want to break up, I can always trace it within 2 months to a time previous to that when they felt extremely close together.
Right.
So what happens is you feel closer, you, than you ever felt before, and then suddenly you start a fight about your mother-in-law. And you, what am I, and they come in and they say, we're going to get a divorce because of his affiliation with his mother-in-law. And I track it back. So if I could do anything for these people who were married, if I could say to them, listen, pain and pleasure, let them be.
Yep.
Not invite them, not bring pain in on purpose,
yep,
but let them be and let them, and see them as part of the parcel, part of the deal.
Beautiful thing.
Thank you, you.
Thanks, Tom.
Calling in. Sure.
No worries.
Sure. One more call. 209-2900. This is Armando. Everybody's talking about touch. Hi there. You're on the air.
And you're on the air. Peace and love. It's Rashida Armando.
Hello, Rashida. How are you?
I am blessed and highly favored as you are, and thank you for the major contributions. I think what you're saying, along with Khalil, I love Khalil Gibran, and, you know, maybe mix them up. My brother got married several years ago. I was six, and I read the speech to us on love. They was like, could you please sit down with all that? So it goes over.
Right, said, right.
But I say love is freedom. My daughter was seeing this young man a couple of months. He said, Mama Shabazz, what's love? I said, love is freedom. And in that context, I mean freedom to allow the other. Freedom to be who you are and to allow your mate, your partner, to be who they are. So when you said the pain...
Well, Rashida, but does that include the pain,
yes,
of them being not the way you want?
But that's why when you said the word compassion, what that meant to you, and the analogy of the tornado, I thought it was fantastic. And the tornado is on land, so you got that right.
Thank you very much. Cyclones on water.
Yeah, I thought that was a great analogy, how the earth tries to balance itself.
Yeah, it's kind of remarkable, and does all this destructive force. I mean, picks up buildings, kills people, destroys lands and crops, but it's doing it. The effort is not, I am sending down the wrath of God. No, it's like nature is sending down a blessing. It's saying, we're way out of balance, and we got to get the balance back
in. And it all is a blessing. I remember several years ago you saying, you did an excellent program, maybe it was a series where you were, couples thing, and you said when someone is speaking to you and they tell you what's going on for them, how they feel, don't reinterpret it. Don't say to them, oh, so you mean so and so and so. And that stuck in my mind. You must have said that about 5 or 6 years ago.
Right. No, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yes.
Because people don't like to be interpreted, you know?
No, just hear me. I don't need an interpreter. Just hear me. And if you don't understand, it'll come to you. Just be quiet. Be still with it. Hold it. To me, that's the freedom of allowing in relationships. So, yes, the pain is a part of it, and that's an excellent point, that if you can just ride the wave of the, quote, pain and see it really as a blessing, it's wrapped up a little shabbily. The wrapping might not look the way you perceive it, and it's, again, perceptions, but there's a blessing there. For me, everything in my life is a blessing. So the challenges, all of that is a blessing. So that's what was revealed to me, the blessings of all of it.
Ah, Rashida, so nice to hear from you.
Always. You're always in my heart and mind. Peace and love to you, Armand. Thank you.
See you. Bye-bye. Hey, listen, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, since everybody's talking about touch and love, I'm going to bring you something from the past from one of my favorite singers who died and who left some really painful romance behind, Dan Hill. So let me play that for you. But first, we're going to take a short break, and I'll be right back.
You ask me if I love you, and I choke on my reply. I'd rather hurt you honestly than mislead you with a lie. And who am I to judge you on what you say or do? I'm only just beginning to see the real you. And sometimes when we touch, the honesty's
and I have to close my eyes and hide. I want to hold you till I die, till we both break down and cry. I want to hold you till the fear in me subsides.
This is Armand DeMille with you with the positive mind. You know, someone once said to me, you know, they've heard that song so many times they think it's trite. It's magic. It's magic. Sometimes when we touch, you know, the honesty is too much. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine who made those lyrics work like that? Who put that all together? So, we were talking about love and pain. We're talking about the combination of the two. My theory being that that love itself creates a vortex, a positive vortex, and in it, it sucks in negativity. It pulls it in from the environment. You got all this negativity that's floating around you all day long. You got depression, you got, you know, people being negative, you don't know. And then here they see this beautiful, loving couple. And you know, when you see a couple who's really in love and you're depressed, you know you hate them, don't you? It's the first, you look, they want to go find a room, they say. You know, get a hotel room. Stop being so affectionate in public. Because it sucks on your energy. Because it pulls on you. And it pulls your negativity and it challenges it. And it directs its negativity towards you. So a couple very much in love very often will find that they are the target of negativity for many people. That people just, you know, dislike it. They don't want to see that to exist. Now, I understand why, because it's hard to come by. And if you don't have it, you hate seeing it, you know. It's like looking at slim models. You know, it's like looking at a Victoria's Secret catalog when you feel like you're struggling with your weight all the time. It's like you hate it. You know, I wish those people didn't exist. Although I don't think I'd become a good swimsuit model, no matter what weight I am. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're taking your calls at 212-209-2900. We're listening to you, and we're listening to you talk about love and pain. Tomorrow, by the way, just for your own advanced knowledge, Roberta Atti and I were looking at another balancing that's happening between just energy itself, and we found some unique perceptions that I think you'll enjoy on how energy turns into something you can actually eat, how you can eat energy, you know? And I don't mean energy bars. I mean energy, and maybe you could eat love. You know, they're doing it nowadays. Nowadays, it was in Europe recently, and I saw they had these meals. Now, a meal is a terrific thing. If you have to take an antibiotic, they offer you a meal, and so you get this kind of TV dinner, and it's built in, the antibiotics are built into the meal. Or if you've got to take calcium, they put additional calcium supplement into this meal that you buy and you bring home and you eat. So if you're sick, they give you food that is laced with the medicine that you need, as opposed to just giving you the medicine itself. So look at where we're coming. Look at what we're doing. So maybe you can get food laced with love. You know, well, I guess they do that. You know, they used to do that with LSD, right? Right? Well, put a little LSD in the water, everybody will have love. I got to tell you about another European experience, a great one that you should all know about. It was a fascinating thing. I heard about this restaurant, and in this restaurant you go, it is absolutely completely dark, pitch black. It is a restaurant where you get an experience to see what it's like to not be able to see anything. So I go to this restaurant by myself because nobody I knew wanted to go with me. And you go to this restaurant and they take off your outer clothing or anything that has shiny buttons on it. A person comes out who is blind and obviously blind, you know, visually challenged, and that person brings you into a room that is pitch black. Pitch black, you can't see anything, but you could hear there are other people in the room. They sit you at a table, they give you a fork in one hand, a knife in the other. They teach you how to pour water into a glass that you could also feel there, but you can't see anything. It's absolute black. They serve you food, and you're not allowed to know what's in the food. You're just going to taste it to find out what you think it is. So there I was in this place, and there is, you know, here I am. I can't see a thing. And it takes 20 minutes before you get served, and then 20 minutes before you get your second course. So there's a lot of time alone. Well, I'm okay with that. That's fun. Here I am listening and, you know, nothing to watch, smelling, nothing to smell. You know, I couldn't smell anything. I thought I would be able to. I thought it would heighten my smell and my taste. If you can't see, but no, it doesn't. You know what it heightens? It heightens your hearing. My hearing became so sharp that I couldn't stand the amount of noise. You see, I couldn't identify the noise. So there's somebody over there laughing and somebody over there clinking a glass against a bottle, and somebody behind me is making a different kind of noise, and somebody's shouting to somebody else, and I found it ear-piercing. And I usually don't mind noise all that much, but this was horrendous. And not horrendous that the noise was loud, it was just my ear. It was just what happened to me when my sight was taken away, like any animal. If you can't depend on your vision, depend on your hearing. Second most valuable defense mechanism, you see. So my hearing got very sharp, and then they bring me this food. And I know this is a worthy story. And the first thing I'm eating tastes like delicious peas and carrots. I was sure it was, and then they later told me it was shrimp. Oh, no. How could that be? And the second thing they brought me, by the way, all the food was prepared by people who were blind. It was served by people who was blind. Everything, the entire place is run by people who are blind. And in fact, there was one other point that was really great. Behind me, online, I saw a woman who was blind, and she was carrying a cane, and she brought a whole family. I thought, what a wonderful thing. The family gets a chance to experience her world. So there I am sitting in there, and then the second thing they served me, I thought was one thing, and it turned out to be something else completely different. And that was kind of remarkable. But it's quite an experience, and when I came out, I came out of the place, I felt really disoriented because I had just spent an hour in total darkness doing something that I normally do in total lightness. But I found it was all possible and easy to do, you know? They're going to do that. I'm sure they're going to open something like that here in New York, you know, or somewhere in America. They're going to open up some of things because I know they've got them in four different countries so far. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, talking about pain and love and adventures, of course, but pain and love. Have you ever had a deep love that lasts for more than a year that doesn't have pain in it? If you do, it's highly possible, but if there is no pain, you're going to find that there's a limit to what the relationship is, because there are the great old pain duckers. The pain duckers are the people who, when the stuff gets rough, they move away right away. You know, they just get out of the way right away. So what they do is every time there's any kind of a pain, well, let's not talk about it. Let's not address it. This is very common for certain populations and certain states in the Northeast, where people just say, let's be civil all the time, you know. Yeah, we know what state it is, right? It's a little strip of land. But people are very civil. See, they're very civil, and if they ever get into a point where there's a lot of negativity, they take a break. They never fight. They never have an argument. They move away from each other. But even then, you know, even then, I'm sure they accept the pain and they come back together. So I don't think that the love quotient is lower in Connecticut than it is in New York, but it's different. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. This is Jessica.
Hello, Jessica.
Hi. I'm so happy you're talking about love because I need advice. I am very much in love with somebody whose relationship is now over. And I'm going through all these stages. Like, first I was going through disbelief, then I was going through anger, then sadness, and now I'm trying to make sense of it and move on. And I'm not sure, like, when do you move on from love? I don't know if I should keep trying or just give up, you know?
Now, wait a minute. You had a relationship with a person, and it was for how long? How long was this relationship?
Well, I mean, off and on for 4 years, but really 2 years, and then 2 years kind of more off and on, but solid. I mean, we were engaged. We were supposed to get married last month, and the wedding was canceled.
And who canceled the wedding?
Actually, I did.
Yeah.
I mean, I really wanted to postpone it. I didn't want to cancel because I didn't think we were ready.
Yeah, and what is it that told you you weren't ready?
He was trying to change me a lot. We were going to therapy, and I just felt like he was just never happy with the way I was, and he's always trying to change me, and I'm not going to change, you know. And so I just wanted him to, like, and also he brought up the past a lot. Like, if I made mistakes in the past, he would keep bringing them up. And I really don't like that. Like, I wish, I mean, because I make a lot of mistakes, but it's never malicious. I just, you know, I'm just,
yeah,
I hear.
Yeah. Now, you know, all of these things that sound so negative that he did, you know, he wanted to change you, but everybody always tries to change everybody else, believe it or not. Even though we say, like Rashida said a little while ago, accept somebody for the way they are and love them for the way they are and don't expect them to change. True, but you do have hopes that they're going to change and become more your way. That whatever the difference is between the two of you, you want them to kind of agree with you more. And that happens in every relationship. But yeah. There is something. When a relationship dissolves, and when it dissolves, to me, it's a funny kind of thing. To me, it always seems right that it resolves. It dissolves. It always seems right. It always seems like you guys knew something you didn't even know. And so when people break up, they usually don't break up too stupidly. They break up with some kind of knowledge that they may not even be aware of. And then this hard thing happens, like the one you're going through. There you are knowing you should be separate, but having trouble with the separation. You want advice. You want advice. You want me to tell you, move on. Or you want me to tell you, go after him and get him back.
Yes, I want to get him back.
Yeah, so you have your own advice.
I don't think that it's, I don't know. I mean, I want to, but I don't want to be a stalker, you know? I don't want to get him back and then, like, he's really over it and I'm just the annoying girl who calls, you know, when it's over.
So you've invited him back and he said no, huh?
Yeah. But then he sent me an email the other day saying how much he missed me. And then I called him, and then he was just saying he wants to be friends. I don't understand, you know.
Oh, it's called the push-me-pull-you. You know the push-me-pull-you toy? You never heard of that. It's from a famous play on Broadway. The push-me-pull-you was an animal that had two heads. It had, instead of a head and a tail, it had a head in each direction. It kind of looked like a llama. And it was called a push-me-pull-you, which would go in one direction, then it would go in the other direction, then it would go in the other, and it within the same animal. So the push-me-pull-you people are always doing that. They're trying to let you go, and they're always pulling you back. And you're trying to let him go, and you're pulling him back. We hear a lot of noise in the background.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, my kids came in. I'm a school teacher. Oh, I wish I had more time.
Well, hello to all the kids.
Yeah.
Say hello to your kids.
Yes, I will. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay,
bye. You did hear those kids enter, didn't you? They come in once. On Thursday, we have a very interesting thing. One of the things that we allowed, a school, had auctioned off the presence of in our radio station here and being in WBAI. So somebody had an auction and they needed this money for the school, and the auction was the person would be able to sit in on our radio program, which is going to be on this Thursday. And we're having an 11-year-old child from a school who is going to be sitting in, and I hear that this person is uniquely talented. So we're going to build our programming around that. Kind of fun, don't you think? 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. I did that quickly. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi.
Armand, how are you?
Good. Who is this?
Tony from the Bronx.
Hello, Tony.
You know what's funny? I think I'm going to have to move to Connecticut. I'm ready.
It's expensive land.
Yeah, but it's worth the peace of mind, right?
Because you want that peace of mind, right? You got too many arguments and too much chaos and too much craziness.
Actually, it's been the opposite. I've had 20 years of that, and I'm actually in a great relationship now. So I could really see how I've gone through all those different ways of being. I've gone through all of the ones you mentioned, you know, and the thing that I wanted to share was that the thing that has helped me the most is, in looking back, I always thought I was trapped. I was in two long relationships, both of them pretty bad, and I always thought I was trapped. I looked at it like I was pretty much being a victim of it. And what helps me now is to always realize and always make myself aware that at every given moment, every given argument, every given situation, I have an effect on it, and I'm the cause of it. So it really has given me an incredible sense of freedom and comfort in that area.
Yeah, it's a great difficulty because, you know, most people don't want to believe it that way, but I believe it's the only way you could see it. The only way you could see it is if I'm not the cause of it, I'm perpetuating it. You know, I'm in the middle of this, and whatever it is that's going on, I'm a good piece of it. I'm either caused it or I'm perpetuating it.
Right.
Now, that could be a choice. You know, you could be there. Sometimes you just want to have an argument. Sometimes you just need that extra passion of a fight with somebody. But whatever it is, it's to look at it and not avoid the negativity, not avoid it. Don't run away from it.
Yeah, and you know, not to take it not to take that position from a position of I'm being a martyr. It's from a position of power.
It is a definite position of power.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that happen in the middle of an argument is, again, because sometimes if we consider this, what my hypothesis is that love attracts a negative energy in itself. Therefore, when the negative energy comes in, somehow you find yourself wound up in this negative energy. Then come the words. And the words that come out are negative words that people say to each other. The reason I'm upset with you is because when your mother called, you told her that she was your favorite and I want to be your favorite. Or the reason I'm angry with you is because you didn't buy the toothpaste and so on and so forth. These words are trying to be like fuel for the fire of the negativity. See, and you just make this up. But what happens in the middle of it sometimes is you say things that really hurt. You see, and I was never attracted to you in the first place, and I don't really feel any sexual feelings towards you.
Right. I don't love you anymore. Whatever.
I don't love you anymore. And these wounds become scars. That's the problem.
I have to thank you for something, because I've called you before, and you might remember I complained about my current girlfriend, together 4 years.
I do.
She was too sensitive. And you said something that to this day I really use. So thank you. And it was that she's so sensitive, she's very passionate, and you asked me, and I said, yes, she's incredibly passionate. You said, well, that's part of the whole package. That's part of the whole package. So that passion, that love, that passion for life and for everything, for love, is part of the package that you get when you deal with a sensitive person.
That's right.
And it helped me put it into a different perspective. And it's helped me a lot, so thank you.
Sure, Tony. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you, Armand.
Sure. One more thing I'll say about these words, you know. I listen to a lot of words. You know, couples come in to see me. They pay a lot of money when they come in as a couple, or if they donate the money to BAI, it doesn't matter. It's still costing them a lot of money. But so they're spending this money, and then you watch them go about their business the way they normally go about it. So the initial phase of watching an interview is watching how people argue with each other. And the way they argue with each other normally is pointing fingers and saying words that have no meaning. And the words have no meaning, and it's almost like when you're a kid and you say, you know, you're ugly, and you say, oh, well, you're twice as ugly. No, you're four times as ugly. Just words. Words going back and forth. We made up a word for this, and it's because of my Italian leanings. I call meaningless words that are used in arguments as fuel for the fire, because you really just want to have the argument. I call that palabrase. You're speaking palabrase. So when a person is saying meaningless phrases, you know, things that don't mean anything, and they're just talking to you, and they're kind of saying meaningless things, if you understand that you're talking the language of palabrase, which is specifically meant to be nothing, to have no meaning, it becomes an interesting perception. So consider palabrase, my friends. Consider it's a thing that we do a little much and we could get away with. And consider that if all the pain you ever had in the relationship you have with the person you love were taken away, there would be a very big vacuum. Have both. Have both. Don't believe what they tell you about a relationship should not hurt. Relationships and hurt, they go together. You know? Like peas in a pod. Like Ben and Jerry. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. with Roberta Maria Atti. We're going to be talking about energy and the movement of energy. And if you happen to be passing any parks tonight, keep an eye out for wedding ceremonies in the park. You may spot me there. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1. You could always catch today's show on WBAI.org. Sometimes their archives aren't working. You could go to my website, thepositivemind.com, and you could also listen to it at that point, my friends. It's great being back with you. I will be back with you tomorrow at 1.